on what fucking planet are these Aston Villa players living on when they decide to do the sensible thing and put it out for a corner, safety first? That's like deciding to smash your car into the wall because you're driving too fast. This isn't safer. This isn't how to control this situation.
Tim Sherwood here. You're listening to the Villa Podcast.
So I left while you were sleeping. That's all it took.
And you were worried, Liam, not just in this match, you were worried about this season, and here we are 3 games later. But I do have to take stock, right, because at the turn of the year, I think it was before the turn of the year when we drew with Sheffield United, I added a fixture onto a group of fixtures that I was worried about coming into the start of this 2024 campaign. Games that we had no problem with at home, but when you flipped it around, it was like, that could be sticky, and also that will be really annoying if we don't win those games. And you know, I don't like those matches, games that you think you should win, but you know it's going to be sticky, and it's still, no matter how sticky it is, it's going to feel bad if you don't win it. And they were Sheffield United. Yeah, I did add that on. Sheffield United away from home, new manager. Obviously not a new manager by that stage, but we had dropped points to them at home. The only thing we had dropped points to at that stage. Fulham away, no problems at home, worried about them away. Luton away, Kenilworth Road, I was worried about being Kenilworthed. And we went and beat Fulham, and they've gone and smashed Brighton, beat United. You know, these games that you think, we just got the job done. No, we did really bloody well to get that job done. And in this match, Liam, it was like we were just getting the job done. Got over 60 minutes of just getting the job done. And then bang, bang, Kenilworthed. Kenilworthed. It was like all shit had hit the fan. It was like, oh my God, how are we going to drag this back? Oh my God, the season's over. Oh my God, does any of it matter anymore? And we pulled it back. We dug in. We got an 89th winner again. We got a late winner again. And Aston Villa are marching on them. 11 games to go. 11 games to go.
I know there's a lot of pressure on you, Conan, to start the show and hope something to say at the top of the show, but you don't have to make up a lie about me being worried about this game, because that was actually the strangest thing about it. I wasn't remotely worried about it. And I'm trying to work out now what is more remarkable, the second half collapse or the fact that despite having watched 1,000 Aston Villa games, it completely blindsided me to go from being so good in that first half, so composed, opening them up so regularly, accepting their pressure, playing through it, to whatever that was in the second half. It's like Norman Bates stuff. I mean, the lads went into the changing room at halftime and came back out dressed up as Yoris Okori and Glenn Whelan and left their fucking skeletons in there. Like, Glenn Whelan often looked like rigor mortis had already set in when he was playing for Aston Villa. He had such permeability on the pitch. But that's the only thing I can think of to explain in his performances. But finally, Emery reacted and we did wrestle back a bit of control, and the end of the game was so fucking brilliant just to see us dig a win out that we essentially threw away to go 2-0 up against a team in the bottom three and to nearly probably should have drew the game on balance to get the win out of it is brilliant.
We've seen better teams drop points at Kenilworth Road. We've seen it happen. Let's go straight to the winner, because it was brilliant, and it was another one at the end because of this man, Lukadin, who did deliver the another one line coming down the tunnel. Busted nose and everything. I mean, we talked about wartime Aston Villa in the trenches, getting the job done for the cause. Lukadin is coming off bloodied, but not beaten, Liam. We were not beaten because Lukadin came in, and what a run and what a ball from Moussa Diaby. Gotten a hard time recently, rightly so. He hasn't been amazing, but this is the second time now. It was Forrest as well, the late draw we got in that match away from home, whipped in swinger, Watkins header, this one whipped in swinger, Lukadin header. It's a great header. It's absolutely brilliant. I feel like Moreno might have And it's no slight on him, but I feel like he might have tried to play that ball across the goals. I was sort of looking at that as the ball was coming in, thinking who's going to be on the end of this header. Look at Dean. Doesn't need anybody else on the end of anything. Dean keeps the header down, keeps it to the bottom corner, and reels away like he's been doing it his whole life.
Yeah, and I'm big enough to admit, Conan, that after Diaby came on and he rolled the ball down the line to Zaniolo, a pointless pass into the corner that just gave Zaniolo a 20-yard sprint to get the ball, have two men up his hole. I was just thinking, ah, come on, like, can we stop pretending that we can bring Diaby on to influence a game? I mean, this isn't going our way. Like, you just rest him for the rest of the season. Next year's his year, Conan. He just needed a bit of time to settle down. He needed a bit of time out of the limelight. Turns out what he needed was just a bit of time on the ball. And Jesus Christ, for the first time in that second half, Luton didn't close down a man. And the cross is absolutely out of this world. What a ball. And you're right to point out the run as well. The two of them are completely in sync. Diaby gets the ball, looks up, can see that it's on. Dean sees him looking, realizes that it's on as well, sneaks around the back, steps in front, and puts it away. Like, I was going to say Ollie Watkins there, but, you know, puts it away like somebody who's really good at heading the ball.
Yeah, like Alan Shearer coming on the back stick there. Just flicks it away from the keeper. It was absolutely brilliant, and the celebrations were great. Douglas Luiz just seemed to be laughing throughout the entirety of the celebrations as well. I wouldn't have been laughing. Douglas Luiz missed a header in the first half that we'll come back to, but let's go through the rest of the goals. It was a great first half. It was brilliant. That Ollie Watkins masterclass, really, and he gets us started with a header, and it was a corner, and I don't know if I want to dwell too much and give too much positive reinforcement to a certain set piece coach, but the corner comes in. It's a simple corner, and you know what the difference was of this corner? Not just that Bailey took it, not just that Watkins got up and headed it in, you know, cross, header, goal. It was John McGinn was inside to hold everyone off. John McGinn wasn't over there taking the corner. He was inside using his considerable strength at the rear of his body to hold everybody off and let Watkins go up and get a free header.
I actually think he's done it again, Conan. I think Ollie Watkins is trying to flick that on to the back post and it's come off. It's come off the wrong part of his head and gone at the near post. I will not be convinced that he's put that into the top corner intentionally. Absolutely no way. But you're right. It's so simple. Like, we think we have problems defending set pieces. Luton have 99 problems. But their pitch ain't one. Like, it's the only thing they've got going for them, to be honest. I mean, it looks and feels like we were playing in the back garden on the set of Coronation Street. It's so tight. And it actually just makes it incredible that they have contrived to create and present so much space for the Villa attackers to run into at their near post. There's about three Aston Villa players just filtered into that spot. Absolutely insane. I'm not sure what system they think they had going there, but it wasn't fucking effective. Clearly they just had 10 yards of space free at the front post. Ridiculous.
And it was Ollie Watkins again for the second goal. It was a free kick in the middle of the pitch. Douglas Luiz, it's a nice ball over the top, but this is what Ollie Watkins does. Sometimes you can just play the ball. Like, you play the ball from the fence up the line and Watkins can hold on to it. He'll get thrown over, or he'll just take it down and find a pass, or he'll take it down and run. You play the ball over the top and Ollie Watkins will run into it. You play it down the channel, Ollie Watkins will get a shot away. Just play the ball to Ollie Watkins and it works. And this is just over the top. Watkins gets onto it, drops the shoulder, cuts on these, right? I mean, it's just such great footwork. It's sharp and bangs it, whips it off the post and in. It's just great stuff. It's just a striker at the top of his game. It's a striker that only Erling Haaland has scored more goals in the Premier League. Now, he's now second outright in the Premier League, ahead of Mo Salah, but obviously Salah's been injured, but he's got 16 goals. Like, we've all often cried for a 20-goal season striker. This man has 16 in the Premier League now. This is insane stuff, the numbers he's putting up. He's got the most goal and assist involvement in the Premier League, bar none. Only Ollie Watkins. That should be the new hashtag. Only Ollie Watkins is ahead of Mo Salah or Erling Haaland. That's how good they're performing in terms of goals and assists. It's just amazing what he's doing. And, like, I know he misses some chances, but he has been getting these over and over because of exactly what I'm talking about there.
Yeah, it reminded and does remind me of a young Conan Doherty. Well, everything up until the finish.
Go on. Everybody listen up here. I'm probably going to clip this for the start of the show.
If you know the player on the ball has the vision to see the pass, the quality to pull it off, then you go. And dare I say it, Conan, the pass from Douglas Luiz reminded me of a young Liam Doherty.
Fuck off. Let's get back to the game. Douglas Luiz plays it to Watkins.
a young Liam Doherty lying unconscious on his bed, dreaming about being a better footballer.
I always say that, though, in fairness to you. I always say, geez, you know, if I could do some of the stuff I can see in my head, I'd be really good.
It's a magic goal. It absolutely is. The no-look pass from Dougie, the quality of the ball, the touch from Watkins, it's perfect. Again, the defending is absolutely terrible. Jamie Redknapp trying to be one of the lads, said at halftime, it's kid stuff. Like, how many times have I heard my dad say, never turn your back on the play? We can all relate to that, Jamie. We can all relate to our Champions League manager followers teaching us how to defend, mate. But he is right. Don't jog back without knowing where the ball is. That's the most important thing on the pitch. Where is it and where is it going? Have a fucking think. And the only two moments of the match that Ollie Watkins wasn't giving Mengi a piggyback while looking at Michael Oliver asking, please, sir, can I have some freeze? And Michael Oliver's going to wake up tomorrow with a crick in his neck from all the head shaking he was doing and looking like a fucking blow-up doll from all the purse-lipped not-for-me he was giving at the Ollie Watkins all fucking day. And the two times that Ollie Watkins didn't need a fucking handout from Michael Oliver, he scored two goals. Absolutely deadly.
Yeah. Sadly, is a great description.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/ACAST.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Then shit hit the fan. The chaos started in the second half. Starts with a corner, obviously. Let's just replay some of the old episodes. Longley concedes a corner unnecessarily. I'm going to come back to that in WhatsApp whinges. And then it's just, I mean, I would just give out about that, but there's just so much other stuff that happens. I mean, this is a what the fuck bonanza in the one goal. It's crazy, from the corner being conceded to Ponza heading it in and down into the box. What was going on there? Okay, Morris is so far behind him, he can't get up and down around his head and back to get to the ball. And Ponza just does his work for him and heads it into the box. And it comes back out, and then Morris beats him to it. Then Martinez seems to sly tackle the ball, and Cash is clearing it off the line. This is, you'd almost think this is a caricature of the stuff we talk about, us trying to defend corners. I mean, this is, somebody would look at that and be like, all right, you're over-exaggerating it a bit. You know, this is how Aston Villa try to defend a corner. One of their defenders heads it into, sorry, we give away the corner when we don't have to. Then one of the defenders heads it into the danger area. The keeper slide tackles. Somebody gets it off the line and falls into the net. Three other players follow him for some reason. And then eventually gets tapped in by Tahith Chong.
Yeah, I mean, that goal was coming more than you watching a Rob Edwards video. I mean, it was an absolutely astonishing 20 minutes. And I don't mean of Luton pressure. It was astonishing that it took Luton that long to realise if they don't swing the cross directly into Emi Martinez, then they probably score. Or at least, you know, at least create a situation where they'll only have themselves to blame if they don't. Absolutely ridiculous. They had one at just the end of the first half as well. And I was like, oh my God, I fucking forgot about this. We can just batter a team. We can batter a team for 52 minutes and then they can get a set piece and they can nearly fucking score from it just to get Kenilworth then immediately afterwards, get the crowd up, get the crowd in our faces. The crowd's already in your face. The stadium's so fucking small. But the fact that Luton finally figure out, if I don't float this into Emi Martinez's hands, and then immediately they score a goal from it. They score a goal from it because Aston Villa are all over the fucking place like they always are from a set piece. And I know because Stato put it up saying we've conceded one goal from a header from a set piece. I know that it's true, Conan, but I also know that it can't possibly be true. It can't possibly be the case that we've only conceded one corner. I know it normally ends up in a situation like this where it's absolute chaos. It's a knockdown. It's a fucking shin in. It's an Aston Villa player missing the ball. Something bonkers. Sometimes you can just pass it to a player's foot from a corner, for God's sake. We're so badly marking players. Yeah. But it also can't be the case that we've only conceded one goal from a header. I just cannot believe it, even though I know it's true.
One of them, the last, was it United? The ball just comes in and somebody volleys it in from 6 yards out. Like it dropped at somebody's foot in the 6 yard box. I well believe it. I think that's not a. Yeah, I think that reflects very badly on Aston Villa's defender from corners. The second one is a set piece. And Alfie Doughty figures out the one time if I keep this away from Emi Martinez, maybe Morris will knock it in. And he does. The free kick gets whipped around it. The free kick is because Konsa gets ugbennied down the left wing for Luton. And Konsa gives away to free. And then it's whipped in from Alfie Doughty. And Morris just hammers it home. And Kenilworth is a rockin'.
Yeah, and Unai Emery giving it the big comma after it went in. You know, no panic. Fucking react. Do panic. Like, do something. Get us out. They're all over us. We couldn't fucking breathe. We look like an asthmatic in a coal mine. An asthmatic who shouted football, it must be said as well, during that first 30 minutes. It was absolutely ridiculous. I don't want to see Emery moving around with his hands moving towards the ground like that, unless Austin McPhee's standing beneath him and he's punching him in the top of the head, saying, what the fuck have you been doing for the last 12 months? What is going on? How come every set piece results in a fucking shot on target? This was a 40-yard cross across the box onto somebody's foot. Absolutely ridiculous. And talking about Chidozie and Benny, my God, I didn't realise how annoying it was for every Oller fan who fucking has to watch this lad play, because normally it's brilliant watching him play for Ireland. He loses the ball all the time and then just comes out with it. What the fuck was that? Konsa rightly turned around and stopped because the ball had been lost by Ogbeni, and Ogbeni's just flicking it around him. Absolutely ridiculous.
That's his trick. Like, he knows how to. He switches everybody off. He switches the defense off. He switches the player on the ball, and he wins it again and just powers past him. He's frightening. I think it's insane. He's been brilliant for Luton this season. I think it's mad that he doesn't always start. And he was playing on the left today. Normally he's on the right, but just play him anywhere. Like, he literally plays anywhere for Ireland. He plays wing back, he plays right midfield, and he plays up front. Just play him anywhere. Like, yeah, it's just like it'll work out for you. Trust me. But we went and got the winner anyway, and it was a great day. We're going to leave it there, and we'll come back if WhatsApp wins us. Some fines first. Ezri Konsa hoofed one out of play early on with his left foot. Then Alex Moreno, unnecessary corner. When the ball was just trickling to Martinez, Moreno decides, nah, you know what, let's just hit this out for a corner, see what happens. Then Longley, right? Longley does a double, unnecessary concede from corners. And, you know, one of them, he slices it out. And he's done this before. The ball's coming to his left foot. He's supposed to be left footed. We're playing him on the left side again. And he can't just clear it. He slices it out for a corner. But you know what's worse? He gets a high five from Martinez and Cash. I don't even think I'm going to find Longley. I'm going to find those two high-fiving him for slicing the ball out for a corner as if that's job done, as if we'd be able to deal with that. And then the next one is the one that he concedes from. It's another unnecessary corner that he concedes. And Martinez and Konsa did look annoyed at him and then eventually high-fived him. But you know, I don't like. I think actually, what happened there was Longley initiated the high fives. Like, he's learned now. Like, I can just, you know, boys will praise me for this. I've gotten the ball away from the danger area. Getting the ball to the corner flag is not away from the danger area in Aston Villa's case. And the ball goes in and they score, obviously.
On what fucking planet are these Aston Villa players living on when they decide to do the sensible thing and put it out for a corner, safety first? That's like deciding to smash your car into the wall because you're driving too fast. This isn't safer. This isn't how to control this situation. I would much rather see Longley take a touch with fucking Alfie Doughty or Jordan Clark up his arse than knock it out for a corner. I trust you to steer around the traffic and pull in safely, Clement. You don't have to fucking smash into that wall. What the fuck are you doing?
Cash and Konsa also did it. Like, in the 96th minute as well. I don't know why also there was 90 extra seconds added on to this game. It was supposed to be 5 minutes added on, and nothing happened in injury time, and the game just kept playing. In 96th minute, Cash tries to concede an unnecessary corner, and Konsa finishes the job for him. Both people could have stopped that happening. And like, you go through the game today, Luton had 8 corners. We can't be going to Kenilworth Road conceding 8 corners. It's a miracle that we only conceded 1 goal from those 8 corners.
You're absolutely right. It is. And I'd say the other 7 were just plucked straight out of the air by Emi Martinez. The corners were just so bad. The amount of times he caught the ball was ridiculous, and such poor set piece composure, I would say, even from the Luton players, because they made some really bad decisions. I think if you're playing against Aston Villa, the one player on the pitch that you don't want to put the ball beside is Emi Martinez. Emi Martinez is the best goalkeeper in the world for catching corners. So, and he's the only Aston Villa player that can do anything from a corner. So there's 2 fucking reasons not to put the ball anywhere near him. Put it beside literally anybody else in an Aston Villa jersey, and you're giving yourself a chance.
Yeah, and it brings me on to the first WhatsApp whinge. And it's hard not to be a broken record, right? And I couldn't even think of words anymore to sum up how annoyed I am at all of this. But what I thought of, if this is WhatsApp whinges, and I would send a WhatsApp to this effect, I would send, you know, the meme that's going around now of Jurgen Klopp with the text, "I'm running out of energy." And it would just be that with the caption McPhee underneath. Because I'm saying it's a miracle we only conceded 1 goal from a corner. We conceded 2 goals from set pieces today. We almost once again didn't win a match because of set pieces. And that's just one game that we got away with it. And then we dug it out. Great character. Brilliant. But are we actually going to get to the end of the season getting away with this? Because we're talking about it every week. I'm sure people are fed up listening to it, but it is the big talking point. It is the way they score against Aston Villa. If you're doing analysis now, like, there's nothing else to work on. Like, we already said this as well. Go have a long shot, get a corner. You go win a free kick down the wing. Just get the set pieces. We'll get the goals. Like, anything else that you'd want to work on, don't worry about that. We need to just get the set pieces. Like, are we going to stumble over the line? Because I was believing, say, 7 games ago, there's no way we can't do all the coaching you want. That's what I said about Unai Emery. Get the team playing to a ridiculous level. Get everybody improved. And does any of it really matter if it's going to all be undone, that you concede every time they've got a corner? And I mean, there's 11 games to go. It feels like a long way. But are we going to get away with this? I don't know. Like, it seems like we're just going to have to put up with it anyway until the end of the season.
Yeah, we are. And you're right to say that there's nothing for any other team to worry about or to try to focus on. The only thing you need to focus on is, how do we win corners? How do we win set pieces in the attacking third? And it's not just the people get a chance from every corner. They get a chance from every cross that comes in, it seems. Yeah. It just feels dangerous all the time. And maybe that's a response that I'm having, just to having, you know, days like today when we can see 2 goals from set pieces, that every single time a ball comes into the box, my arse tightens. I just wish our fucking centre halves would tighten up in there as well a little bit and try and deal with this. Because we know our centre halves are brilliant. Surely they need to start having a word with Austin McPhee, and this isn't working.
Yeah.
Every ball that comes into our box, we're not able to defend it. Like, I will defend every situation from open play with consummate ease, is what Ezri Konsa can walk up to his management team and say. So give me a fucking hand from set pieces. Why am I under so much pressure from this? What is going on? Who's doing something wrong here? I can have a guess, but you know, I'm not the one to say that. Manager, maybe you can pick somebody who might be at fault here, seeing as it's every fucking game and it's the same person who's involved in the setup every game.
I did think that. I was like, who's the leaders here now? Like, and I don't just mean who's going to go put their head on the ball. It's like, who's going to go to the manager and say, what are we doing about this? Our season is hinging on these decisions. The second WhatsApp wins, and you sort of touched on this as well, and we're not going to get a better comparison than a Coronation Street garden. Is that what you said? The back garden in Coronation Street. Actually, I've got a vivid image of that now. But Card on Twitter said, why are Luton allowed to play on a five-a-side pitch? I do want it measured. Sometimes, you know, you don't think it's going to happen in the Premier League, but there are some teams that do just get away with having smaller dimensions because nobody's gone. I'm talking about Sunday League teams now. But nobody's gone into the effort of just measuring it out. It's like, I've got a pitch, let's just play. It feels that way with Luton. It feels that way. There's no more room because it's in the middle of a house in the state. So they can't widen it. The stands are already been built. So this is what we got, lads. It's either that or nothing. So, you know, we're in the Premier League. Let's get on with it.
I'd say they're definitely at the minimum end of the allowable dimensions, but I suspect, Conan, that they are at the allowable dimensions.
Yeah, well, we won't know until we measure. And then this is probably a new finding system that we can do twice a season, but it's boys who lost the ball to Ross Barkley. And I've got two. I don't know if I missed any. But Alex Moreno running down the wing in the left-hand side in the first half, just straight into Ross Barkley, who slides and takes the ball off him and comes forward. And then John McGinn laid on. John McGinn just kept running. I know he was thinking, I'll run the clock down. Now I'm strong. I'm usually, you know, but it was just, he was too open. Normally McGinn's able to get his arse in the way, and Barkley slid tackle him from behind, and McGinn went tumbling over, and Barkley, I didn't see Ross Barkley make one tackle in his Aston Villa career, and he's taking the ball off two of our boys and him profusely sweating while he's doing it, and he's one who looks effortless as he's doing it. Yeah, that has to be a fine.
He definitely doesn't look fucking effortless with the fucking water dripping off him, and that gives him a natural advantage as well when he's going in for a slide tackle that allows him to zip across the grass. But the Alex Moreno one, I was going to fucking tackle Alex Moreno. He presented the ball so much. It's fucking absolutely ridiculous. I mean, it was like he almost waited then for Ross Barkley to come in and slide tackle. Ross Barkley didn't want to do that. And he's like, oh, jeez, I better just take the ball off this fucking numpty. John McGinn one was so frustrating as well. John McGinn's just lying face down on the grass, 70 yards away from our goals, that we should be desperately trying to defend at this stage. And it's not like we could have relied on the other boys that were back there today, because Luton were all fucking over us. We needed John McGinn to be tight and tidy in there.
Yeah. And maybe that's Ross Barkley's trick. He's having a good season, but he's playing on a very small pitch. Sits him down to the ground.
Yeah, that must be it, because God knows I've got no other reason to believe that it's because he's good at football.
Let's take a break. We'll come back after this.
All these...
Right, get over it. It's Aston Villa FC, not Jack Grealish FC. Get a fucking grip.
Somebody called me a wanker.
Let us mourn.
Somebody called me a freak.
I mean, we've just gotten the news. It's devastating. We're upset.
Somebody reported me to the Villa podcast on Twitter.
Do these people turn up to funerals or wakes saying, come on, get over it. It's the Doherty family, not the great Auntie Margaret family. It's time to find out what Uncle Jimmy's really made of. Time for Auntie Barbara to step up. Fucking psychopaths, let me mourn. I'll rally around the Doherty family. I want them to do well. I want them to succeed, but I'm fucking devastated. It's not going to be the same without Margaret.
R.I.P. Auntie Margaret. The Ronnie Rosenthal Award, I'm just going to rattle through all the first half options and then we'll go through the second half options then as well. Leon Bailey played one into Ramsey's chest. I don't know if Ramsey could have made more of it and probably been very harsh. He didn't get it under control. The defender was in the way, but it did come through to his chest and it went off his chest and away.
He said the defender was in his way. The defender wasn't in his way because it came to his chest. It was ridiculous. He almost jumped into it to take it on his belly. Yeah. And I sometimes think I'm the only person that knows that. Maybe I shouldn't give this away. You can score with your chest. You can hit the ball with your chest. You don't need to take it down whenever the ball's at chest height. Sometimes you can just throw your chest at it and it'll go into the net. Yeah. It'll catch the keeper off. You can generate a lot of fucking power with your chest as well. It's the most underutilized part of the body for scoring goals. And I don't know why I'm telling everybody this, because now anytime I play against somebody, the goalkeeper is going to be on red alert.
Also, if Leon Bailey's playing it to your chest, just trust that it's the right thing. Like, he's playing it to your chest for a reason. Jacob Ramsey then had a decent shot, forced a save from the keeper. Then Douglas Luiz from the Tielemans corner. It's a bad header over the bar. It's a big chance, actually, from Douglas. Not even over the bar. He just pulls it. He tries the Ollie Watkins, and he succeeds. He just pulls it harmlessly wide of the goals. And then Bailey played Watkins through after John McGinn won the ball back, and Watkins forces a save, and then Watkins hits the post then as well from Bailey. So this was two Bailey assists left out there, and I did add them to my fantasy team. I did rectify the Rashford mistake that I'm going to own now, so you can't hold it over me. Bailey came in and he left a lot of assists out there through no fault of his own, but he was the one that played Watkins through as well. It's a tight angle. Watkins just loves a tight angle and hits it off the base of the post. It's such a good strike.
Yeah, it was. It was a lovely strike. There was one with Ramsey as well early on where, like, Ramsey had essentially had three chances and then got taken off. That was his day today. Mengi does really well to close down Jacob Ramsey, and we can see before that what Ramsey thinks he's doing. Emphasis on the thinks there. Because he's trying to cut across and take the angle away from Mengi. But Mengi isn't Callum Chambers. And if Mengi's able to get back there, he's got a bit of pace. And Jacob Ramsey need to be a lot more ruthless there. And the one where he bends, and it's so good from Douglas Luiz to force McGinn forward. And it's brilliant from McGinn to force Ramsey to shoot. And it's not good enough from Ramsey, even though he does force the save from the goalkeeper. But it's nowhere near going into the net. The Douglas Luiz header, Conan. Jesus Christ, he doesn't know where he is on the pitch. Like, I don't know what he's playing out there. Maybe because no Luton players are beside him. Maybe he thinks he's been played a short corner and he has to whip this all the way across the box. It's an absolutely dreadful header from him. Such a big, big chance. Mm-hmm. And then the one with Watkins down the side. It's fucking brilliant from John McGinn. There's nothing better than one of your players knowing they're fitter, stronger, more productive, comfortable not defending too deep. Regular exercise at the gym, and then just passing the ball. I'm gonna stop that joke because you don't get it, and because it wasn't funny. And it's a brilliant, brilliant piece of play then from Leon Bailey. He drags the ball out far enough that people don't think the pass is going to come to Watkins, and then Watkins' shot. So unlucky.
Longley missed one as well from a John McGinn cross. He really should have done better, but didn't really expect him to do better. And then Rodgers whipped one. Nice shot, nice save. I don't think there's going to be much more to that, really. It's just really good effort. I don't know what else he could have done, but you know, from the angle and stuff, it wasn't going to... It would have had to be one of the best finishes of all time to get it away from the keeper, the way the keeper got up. And then Andros Townsend Sr. gets a chance at the end of the half. Who's Andros Townsend Jr.? I mean, is this the greatest market employee of all time, just paving the way? For his son to come through, and everybody's already waiting for him and they already know that he's a real deal.
Yeah, that must be it, even though Andros Townsend plays like a senior citizen. Maybe that's just the emphasis on that. The Longley one, like, it's almost impossible to score from there. I mean, he's falling in the opposite direction to try to generate the power there. The only reason I'm bringing it back up is that Clement Longley wins an awful lot of headers in the opposition box. And I think that Austin McPhee needs to be praised for that, because Clement Longley is so unassuming that, and so unexpected to be an aerial threat in the opposition box. He is definitely not helping out in our own box. That I think this must be a target for Aston Villa. Nobody bothers picking him up. Maybe he's just got really good movement. Maybe we should try him up front, Conan, if we end up in a crisis situation.
Our only chance really in the second half. It was a good drive from Rodgers through the middle, and he plays it to Watkins. One of those pass where you were sort of thinking the pass to the right was good, and it looked like he underhit the pass to the left to Watkins, but it was actually a really nice pass to Watkins, who comes back onto it, but he just doesn't catch it. And then Luton had two big chances with a Doughty free into Morris, and then Morris had a header from across, a Ross Barkley cross, and it goes down into Emmy Martinez, who makes the save. But wait, what do you think?
You're calling it a Ross Barkley pass, but it was a fucking Jordan Henderson cross, and it was so, so, so unlucky from Luton not to score from that. I mean, that, I thought that was game over. It's such a well-presented chance that her big centre-forward, what you would imagine he thrives on, and that should have been Luton out of sight.
Do you think it's a Douglas Luiz header is the big chance that we should have scored?
I think that it's because he makes such an absolute mess of it as well. Mm. Like, he's not even close. It's not even on the... You'd be forgiven for forgetting about that header, and maybe we should stop talking about it now, because I'm sure a lot of people listening probably don't actually remember the header. It was so bad.
All right, let's go to the You Like Glenn Whelan take a 90th minute penalty award. Do you still have your Ireland season ticket, Liam?
Yeah, I haven't sold it. I couldn't find a buyer, would you believe?
No, well, I'm surprised you're not looking for a buyer this week now, especially. So the news is that John O'Shea's in as the interim Ireland boss. They couldn't get... They had 4 months to hire a manager and they failed. So they've got... 4 months later, they've hired a caretaker boss. John O'Shea is in. He's brought back Brian Kerr. Not sure if English listeners would really know who he is, but he managed Ireland back in 2003, I think. And he's also got another coach. Goes by the name Glenn Whelan. They're into mastermind the games against Belgium and Switzerland, and I'm sure you will be there no matter what to cast your eye over the very beginning of Glenn Whelan's coaching career.
Just when I thought Josh Cullen couldn't become any more insufferable, you're now telling me he's going to be getting the fucking his tips and advice from Glenn Whelan. Classic. I don't think you're drifting in behind the opposition number 10 enough there to not receive the ball, Josh. I think you could do that with a bit more speed, a bit more power. Fucking unbelievable. I didn't know about that. It's actually devastating news, to be honest, Conor. I heard somebody from the FAI being interviewed on the radio last week, and the tone of the interview whenever they were asking about John O'Shea was essentially, well, we had to give it to somebody. This is the fucking manager of the national team. Like, we had to give it to someone. Like, not only that, you're giving it to somebody who was an assistant to the person you didn't think was good enough to do the job previously. Fuck me, lads. Like, you might as well have given it to Glenn Whelan.
Well, your wish has come true. Glenn Whelan's in. Let's see what he can do. Yeah, let's see what he can do. If they light it up now in these friendlies, I wonder will he get the job. I don't know what they've got up their sleeves in April, but it better be bloody good now in fact they're hiring a caretaker. As if to say, wait till you see. Wait, just wait a month. It'll be worth it.
Yeah, it's like Man United writing off their entire season 2 seasons ago just to wait to give it to fucking Erik ten Hag so he could go out and buy half the Ajax team that he had 5 years ago that Dusan Tadic was the best player in.
Let's so this is the Glenn Whelan Award, but it's really, it's almost renamed now at this stage. You let Austin McPhee look after our set pieces award.
But they're often I think your notes have gotten scrambled up here. We've done Austin McPhee.
I can't get off it. It's the only thing in my mind right now. Like, we've done a lot of them, and we have, you know, we have noted that we did score a goal from the corners, and maybe all this is pointless, but I want to look at our own corners anyway. So Douglas Luiz, we scored a goal and we did get our biggest chance from the corner and we missed him. So maybe Austin McPhee will once again go back into Unai Emery and say, I know what you're going to say, but hear me out. that must be how it goes every week. And he brings these attacking corners to Unai Emery and says, yeah, look, I know we can see it in another 2 down the other side, but the deficit should have actually been, we should have been 3 up on corners. We should have scored 3 more than they scored against us. And the first one is a mess. I don't know how he thinks they're going to score from this. This is that Douglas Luiz takes it and then runs out to about 25 yards out on the left wing and crosses it to the far corner of the box for John McGinn to go up and contest a header. I don't know what the plan was there. I mean, could that ball not be crossed to that shite area to a contest from the corner flag? Douglas Luiz could definitely do that. All right, yeah, I'll just send it over there. Because you might think that was just, a routine that went wrong. It wasn't, because it happened again. Only this time it went to Youri Tielemans. Tielemans gets that ball in that position, hits it a little bit deeper. It doesn't land on the corner of the box, lands towards the byline. Nothing happens. Like, this was a plan. I don't see what they were trying to work it from. They get a couple into the keeper's hands as well. We're talking about Emi Martinez getting so much joy, but Villa were doing it over and over. And yes, we scored, but we scored from just knocking it in there. Just throw it into Ollie Watkins and see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, like, this the stats for Austin McPhee and Aston Villa have gone up to this week for, you know, two goals from set pieces. One was a 50-yard pass clipped over the top from Douglas Luiz because Ollie Watkins was alive to the space that Luton had left behind. And the second was Ollie Watkins wandering into the space that Luton had left in the middle of their own box. If we're praising Austin McPhee for that, that's insane stuff. And you might say, we dragged all the Luton players over there. If the Luton players walked over there because that was Austin McPhee's plan, then they're the idiots here. And maybe I'm talking myself around here, Colin. Maybe Austin McPhee knows how stupid your hero, Rob Edwards, actually is, and thought, if I just put a few players to the back post, they'll all go there, and then all we have to do is run into the space in the front post. Maybe he is a genius.
Can I just ask, because we've never actually had a conversation about this, but how do you know I like Rob Edwards?
We haven't had a conversation about it. It doesn't mean you haven't tried to initiate it.
Tim Sherwood, we played two number 10s and bamboozled them award. I love this category. Austin McPhee, no, I'm only joking. He's never coming up in this award section. But I do have an idea. I mean, maybe this was Austin McPhee's plan. I know a lot of it was just down to really bad corners from Alfie Doughty. And, you know, if you put the ball in Martinez's vicinity, he's going to catch it. But you know the way we've got boys just running around and effectively marking people? Why don't we just have Martinez coming out and trying to catch every corner that comes in? Like, would that work better? It definitely would work better. I don't know if it's a great idea, but it would definitely be an improvement than what we have now at the minute.
But see, Austin McPhee and Douglas Luiz have already ruined that plan because Douglas Luiz scored directly from a corner twice for Aston Villa Austin McPhee's a genius.
Well done, well done. The only other nomination I have is Unai Emery getting fed up and whipping off four players at once. I thought it's funny that you said about the Diaby thing, because when Diaby and Zaniolo was kind of like, oh, I'm not going to be fooled by this now. I know what this means. This means it's not going to mean a winner. And we didn't get the winner, courtesy of the two boys setting up another sub, Luca Dean, and the other one that was three of the four. And then Tim came on and did pretty well. He injected a bit of directness as well in the middle of the pitch. He wasn't on the ball that much, but was it harsh on Rodgers? I thought Rodgers did all right. No, did you say?
Yeah, I said no. Rodgers, Bailey, Tielemans all had to come off. They hadn't done anything in about 20 minutes except watch Luton stream through the middle of the pitch. I know that wasn't necessarily their fault, but we saw that even Zaniolo had more of the ball whenever he came on. Tielemans was done. Like, Tielemans' second half performance there was definitely, and Ashley Westwood,
I was just going to interrupt and say, and the next category is the Ashley Westwood, oh, he was playing award, and I have Youri Tielemans. Even, like, I know he was done in the second half, but he was ineffective in the first half.
Yeah, and I didn't actually think, I don't know why I didn't think this, I didn't think he would take off Rodgers, so I was trying to think, right, definitely put Rodgers up front now so we can bring on somebody else in midfield, because he's doing nothing there, and Tielemans absolutely has to come off, yeah. Because I don't think he's still on there in mind or spirit anyway. He was just kind of wandering around. One time the ball came to him, and we finally got a bit of possession in midfield, and then he just tossed the ball over the top, trying to play a ball down the line to Leon Bailey. It was like we were 4-0 up or something, and he was just trying to play this really, you know, I couldn't give a fuck pass over the top. Not that I think that's ever appropriate at this level of football, but that was what he was doing. It's like, Jesus Christ, Youri, put your foot in that ball and pass it to a teammate. We haven't had the ball in the last 3 minutes.
Yeah, but the subs overall were good, so they do deserve that nomination. But I think you probably bring us on to the Vimen meter, and going up, I'm going to start with Kenilworth Road. Not the pitch size, because I still have my suspicions about that. It's a real thing. Being Kenilworth is a real thing. The fans, right? Before, I know Villa weren't good for the whole second half, but they were comfortable in the first 15 minutes of the second half. Or 10, anyway. And the fans were just they're very loud. I mean, maybe it doesn't take much to be loud in a small room. But they're all, like, they're just singing, like, they get a throw in, and everybody's, like, up, they're all up, they're all pointing their fists, and you'd forget that they're 2-0 down. It actually is really cool. You know, if you were, it probably is something to do with the Luton story as well, where they do just seem to be enjoying themselves. It's like, it doesn't feel like there's a real fear wrapping around that club with relegation. It's just, like, they're happy, like, I don't want to sound patronizing, they're enjoying being here, and they're giving it their all. Maybe, but the fans are up for it. Like the it didn't take a goal to get the fans going. They were all going anyway. Every corner, every throw. Maybe they just know who they were playing. Let's be honest.
Yeah, but like also let's not overplay this getting Kenilworth thing. Con, I think they've won 3 games there this season. I mean, Kenilworth Road isn't a fortress. They've got 11 points at home this season in 14 games. They're shite at home. They're shite away. Their players are nowhere near good enough. Ross Barkley looks like a superstar for them. For Christ's sake,
going up Ollie Watkins. Obviously, it's amazing what he's doing. If he didn't score 2 goals today, he'd probably be going up just because of the forward shift they can give you in these away matches. The stats are incredible. The performances are great. I mean, I think was there a game there where I was like, I mean, it was a WhatsApp whinge to be fair to me, but it was just, you know, the affront of him giving out about the fans and he's going to miss a chance like that. I mean, you bang in 4 goals in 2 games and all that goes away very quickly.
Yeah, and I think during WhatsApp wins as well, maybe it was during the Rossenthal Award, I said there's a £200 million player in there when he would just start taking some more chances. And, you know, if he scored more chances, he definitely would be worth £200 million. But I was being slightly facetious there. Ollie Watkins is priceless for Aston Villa. There would be no point in selling him because we would never be able to sign a player of that quality without spending all the money we had to get for him. He's absolutely remarkable and a remarkable centre forward. And that one that he took down the right hand side, I mean, like, oh my God, what have we got in our hands here? It's not just the confidence and the effort that strikes up the post. It's how quickly the shot comes. Mm. He does the step over and he doesn't set himself. I don't know how he's got it away that quickly and with that power. Absolutely devastating centre forward play. And when you think about, he has that ability just to run the channel and get a shot away so quickly. His finish was so neat. The header went in. But the first half and the second half, our game plan was to play the ball to Ollie Watkins' feet when he was giving Mengi a piggyback. It was the way we decided to get out. The pitch is so narrow, we couldn't play through the lines the way we normally do. Obviously, Jacob Ramsey coming off really affected how we were playing then as well. We had to change that slightly. And it just to have that ability to hold the ball up, to be the ball player, to run the channels, to run narrowly into the box and just get your shots away. Absolutely lethal centre forward.
Should the Aston Villa medical team, conditioning team be going down? I don't know. I mean, it's stacking up. The evidence is stacking up. Ramsey came back. Ramsey's away. Hopefully he's not away, but geez, it's just annoying because he looked good again as well. And obviously he's been good the last few games too. Finally, for the first time this season, because he's missed most of the season, he's up to sharpness. He's ready to rock. Let's go. And, you know, I saw a really funny video. It was on Twitter where, you know, it was like, say, 3 levers and it had Villa's defenders like Torres, Kanza, Carlos, and every time someone knocked one on, the other 2 went off. So you pushed Torres forward and Kanza went back down, and you pushed Kanza forward and Torres went back down. Like, that's what it feels like. It's just, we can't get everybody going. Like, Torres is on the bench the whole game again today. I don't know if that was just for vibes again, where they're just trying to convince, don't worry about it, he's here. He's obviously not ready to go. He played longer the whole fucking match.
Definitely going down is Jacob Ramsey. I mean, he went down about 2 or 3 times in that game. Maybe he should have come off the first time.
Oh, he should have.
And I think it was the last game as well. I text you saying, did I see Jacob Ramsey grab his foot again there? I don't know what the story is with his injury, but it's caused him problems since he's come back, because every game he seems to be looking down at it. I actually hope it's a mental thing and that he doesn't trust his foot yet, because if it's an actual injury, this is fucking horrible. What's he doing out in the pitch if he has to come off or play through pain every time he's on there.
Yeah. I mean, this would be the second time he's come back in a stint and gone, but potentially gone back again with injury, with the same injury as well. It would basically be his whole season affected by this one injury. It's heartbreaking. Hopefully he's all right. Going down, Tielemans has to go down. He's been going up and off recently. I think going up, one of the people who've been going up most this season, but then he got injured as well, was Luca Dean. Luca Dean's back. I mean, how often was I putting them up? Every single week. Maybe a bit too much, says you. But I was enjoying it. Moreno was out. We had no other choices. And Luca Dean was rising to the occasion. And oh, he rose today. He rose to the occasion. The Kenilworth occasion.
Yeah, it didn't matter how he played today. If he got that winner, it was absolutely brilliant. And even just to float in at the back post like that. I know that's the way we're set up. But that's the way we're playing. That's the way we're encouraged to play. Unai Emery obviously said that to him on the bench last week. It's like, if you get on this pitch, make sure you get fucking forward. I know you're the tight defensive option that we bring on to see games out. Yeah. But I also want to see you getting forward, Luca. And yeah, like I said, it wasn't just the finish. It was the movement. It was the sneaking in behind, stepping in front. The fullback didn't know he was there. The fullback was just looking at the ball the whole time. And Luca Dean made a mug of him.
Going up, Emi Martinez.
Go on.
Caught a lot of balls. Like, I mean, that could have and should have been way worse. Especially a 2-2. Like that, even if some of those balls just, you know, came to headers and chances that went wide or another corner. That feeds into momentum for them, but I feel like Martinez just took all that away.
I think you're right. Sorry, yeah. I think I need to watch another game of football with any other goalkeeper in the Premier League in it, because it's so easy to forget that a lot of goalkeepers don't just come out and catch the ball. And some of the catches were brilliant as well. There was one where I thought he was trying to nominate himself for the Ronaldo not hitting the Shithousery award when he dropped to the ground and then held his back. But he is so extended and so far off the ground for that one that it probably did fucking hurt whenever he landed in the small of his back, top of his arse for that one. So I feel sorry for him for thinking badly of him. I don't think Emi Martinez would ever try to time waste like that.
I'm going up by the most, obviously, is Moussa Diaby. I mean, brilliant. Like, what game-winning involvement. And again, it's always good when Diaby does something really good, because we know, like, we've seen it. We know there's a great player in there. But also, right, I want to bring it back to the haircuts, because Ollie Watkins, I don't know if you remember me talking about Ollie Watkins getting the sort of half Moussa Diaby, got the hairline anyway.
I can't even remember how this conversation started, Conan, so probably not.
I'll dig it out and send it on to you. But and I was critical of that haircut. I thought it was just... I was half arsed. I thought if Watkins was going to do it, he might as well do it. But he sort of got a hybrid of what he used to have. I think it suits Ollie Watkins. I saw an old picture of Watkins with his normal hair, and I was like, ah, that's not his hair. Like, this has become his hair, and the way he's become that lethal striker. And it's all because Moussa Diaby's bringing the boys around and showing them how to do it, showing them how to fade, showing them how to get that line at the front. And on top of that, he's now backing it up on the pitch, finally.
Yeah, it was brilliant, brilliant vision, and then brilliant execution of a dangerous pass as well that you wouldn't necessarily that you wouldn't necessarily think a player that should have low enough confidence like Moussa Diaby would decide to play, because it's a really high risk pass, but it's fucking executed so well, and yeah, couldn't be happier for him. The only thing going up higher than Moussa Diaby is Tahit Chong's cross in the first half. I don't think I've ever seen anyone hit the ball as hard as that. What in the name of fucking Christ was that?
I don't know. I was really disappointed he scored, because I wanted to cook him a little bit. All right, let's leave it there. Great win. Another great run that we're on, and it's good timing as well. It's good. We're 11 points clear of Man City, or 11 points clear of Man United at the time of recording, and I assume we'll still be 11 points clear of Man United whatever time you pick this podcast up during the week. We're back on Thursday. We've got Ajax, we've got Jordan Henderson ball, And we've got a big one then at the weekend, so let's get ourselves ready for that. Let's just enjoy this one, though. Thank you, Luca Dean. Thank you for another one. See you later.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.